Hey guys, it's Pablo. We are still in 2021. It is Thursday, December 30th, and we're here continuing our week of best ofs, our favorite episodes from this calendar year. And today's was originally recorded in October, and it is a wild ride. If you like mysteries, if you like coming of age stories, I think you'll love this one. Hope you enjoy. Ryan Hockensmith, where does this story begin?
It begins in Michigan with a man named David Olson. He had an off day this summer, and so he thought, you know, I've been meaning to yank out these back steps of mine that are crumbling and falling apart, so I'll do it on my off day. He works as a machinist, so he's a pretty handy guy. Went and bought a sledgehammer, and one July morning, he just went out back, started the process of demolishing the steps himself. There's like three steps coming off the side of the back of his house. I would say that the size of the entire area is like if you took an old phone booth and tipped it over on its side. It's not huge, but it was a full day's work. But before he even started swinging the sledgehammer, though, it was crumbling enough that he thought, well, I'll just start yanking some of this off with my hands. And he yanked the first cement block off the side. And the first thing that surprised him was that it wasn't dirt behind the cement block. It was sand. So sand comes pouring out. And as the sand pours past him, he kind of peeks underneath the steps. And he could not believe what he saw. There were three bowling balls staring at him, half covered in the sand. And he took a step back and was just like, whoa, wait a second. No way.
What happens then?
Well, he just goes back to work. And he just keeps digging and digging and digging. And every 2 minutes or so, he'd find another bowling ball or three or five. He got up to 20. And then 40, and then 50, and he blew past 50, just kept pulling him out of there. He kind of just lost track of counting, and he just kept rolling him off his back porch. When he got done, he finally had this moment where he stood on his back porch and he surveyed the mound of bowling balls just strewn everywhere in his backyard. And it finally hit him, like, where in the hell did all of these bowling balls come from?
We tell all kinds of stories here on ESPN Daily. Stories about superstar athletes, stories about important and controversial issues throughout sports. Stories that enrich your understanding and hopefully make you a smarter, more informed sports fan. But today's story is none of those things. Today is the story of a man, his mysterious discovery, and how a backyard full of bowling balls changed his life. I'm Pablo Torre. It's Thursday, October 28th. This is ESPN Daily. So Ryan, you're here with, I think, arguably the strangest story we've ever had on ESPN Daily. And you are already, you're the guy who comes to us with these local news stories. But this one is both deeply local and also like deeply mystical. So thank you for joining us.
Glad to be here.
So your reporting took you to Norden Shores, Michigan, to meet our protagonist here, a man named David Olson, the machinist you told us about at the top. Tell us who this guy is.
Oh, he's just a quiet, Midwestern, average dude, 33 years old. He has three kids, all under the age of five. Lives in Norden Shores, Michigan, which is maybe 200 yards off Lake Michigan. It's just right there in the backdrop of the town. He works as a pretty skilled machinist, which means he works on pretty heavy machinery, making parts for other machines. And he's had a bunch of jobs over the years.
Like, I went to community college for a little bit and then stopped and kind of lost a year or two doing random jobs. Like, I was working at like retail, or I worked at Michigan Adventure for a while doing maintenance there.
He definitely was very open. He had some moments in his life where he was just trying to find his footing and wasn't sure what he wanted to be when he grew up, even when he was 20, 25 years old. You know, he said, I was out at the bars a little too much, wasn't sure what kind of job I wanted. College didn't work. He just wasn't going to be a guy who went for 4 years to study something. But he's very good with his hands. He can fix stuff. So he just thought, I'm going to end up doing something like that.
I took a bunch of classes in machining, and that's how I've gotten kind of where I'm at now with doing the CNC machining and engineering stuff. So it kind of helped build me up.
But it took him a while to find his footing. He kept using that phrase, I had to find my footing.
So David Olson, Ryan, he's just like your everyday regular guy, it sounds like, which also would mean that, like many of us, he's wasting time on the internet. And that, bizarrely, becomes kind of important to this story.
There were about at least five jaw-dropping moments for me as I talked to David for this story. And one of them was his recent internet usage, because he said, you know, when the pandemic started, I don't know how I stumbled upon it, but I got interested in various Facebook groups devoted to stuff people find different places.
A fertile genre, I am assuming.
It's way more fertile than you would have ever expected. There are tens of thousands of people in various Facebook groups. He joined two and got really into them. One was stuff people find in walls. Another was stuff people find in the woods. But he got really wrapped up in stuff people find in walls.
Ryan, what kind of stuff do people find in walls?
There seem to be two genres of stuff people find in walls. One is just like the guy building the wall 80 years ago, his watch fell off. So there's like this antique watch preserved pretty well in your wall. Stuff like that. Then there's some really demented people out there really playing a long game on pranks.
Oh,
there are many people that have found like fake skeletons in their wall. And the only explanation is like the people who built it 87 years ago thought, you know, maybe a century from now, someone will find this skeleton.
Wait, so the stuff people find in walls, as terrifying a range of objects that is, I didn't realize that inside one's house and around one's house, one might also find bowling balls, right? So when David, who has this pre-existing fascination with discovery of weird things inside your home, when he finds the bowling balls, like, what is his strategy at the very beginning?
He kept taking pictures and posting them. Periodically, every hour or so, he would take a picture and post it to Facebook. You can see the escalation of the photos. Halfway through, he like called into his wife, hey, Megan, come on out. And she came out, and they're like pretty reserved Midwesterners. And she just looked at the pile and was like, oh, man, look at all those bowling balls. And so she went back in and went to work. He did get a sense. She told him later, like, hey, a lot of people are looking at these posts. And so he kept taking pictures and posting them. And this thing truly went viral.
I'm looking at some of the photos here, Ryan. I mean, for those who haven't seen this, how would you describe, like, the visual? Because it's an infestation of bowling balls, basically.
It defies belief. None of the balls that they found had holes in them. They were just like these holeless bowling balls. There's basically three types of bowling balls that they found. One were just these unmarked black bowling balls. Then there were these cool blue sky cloud design type things. But then there were like 10 or 15 that were this grayish, bizarre color. Some of them were a little misshapen. And his son, Zeke, he said, Dad, these are alien eggs.
The accounting on this, Ryan, I got to get this straight here. After all was said and done, how many bowling balls did David Olson find?
Well, at the end of day one, he counted them up And even he was taken aback by the final number. But when he got to the end that first day, 158 bowling balls.
Jesus Christ. That is so many bowling balls.
Yeah. What's really kind of haunting about this, though, is that in the weeks since then, he'd be out back doing something and be like, hey, look at that. There's another bowling ball. And so he has found four more and is up to 162.
Coming up, where those 162 bowling balls came from and how they ended up underneath David Olson's house.
Now let's talk about the play of the week. The pressure to follow up Hypnotic and Cognac weighing heavy on the team. Hypnotic was in the cup, blue, and ready for the play. And boom, Añejo Tequila came in with a smooth assist to Hypnotic's tropical fruit finish. Shaken, strained, poured, it was green and good. The playmaking splash shifted the tempo. Another great cocktail from the Hypnotic team. Every season is Hypnotic and tequila season. Hypnotic Liqueur, Bardstown, Kentucky. 17% alcohol by volume. Hypnotic reminds you to think wisely, drink wisely.
So David Olson of Norton Shores, Michigan, has discovered 162 bowling balls, Ryan, underneath his back stairs. And obviously this gets massive attention on the internet. But what was the media reaction to his discovery?
He got swarmed.
Do-it-yourself demo work. It's a thing. Destroying something old to build something new. A Muskegon man had to dig really deep to do it. Man, does he have some balls.
I felt like a paleontologist with my little brush because they were all suspended in so tightly that I couldn't get one out without actually dusting all the sand off of it.
He did all of the local interviews, and then it branched out.
Was probably working on it for 4 hours, and then looked behind me, and there's just a sea of balls, so I'm just kind of pushing them off the ledge and trying to get them out of the way.
He was doing radio shows. He did some TV. Inside Edition came and shot a 3 or 4 minute piece with him.
The mysterious objects were, in fact, bowling balls. The more he dug, the more he unearthed.
As he was telling me this, as he was going through it, he like couldn't even keep track of the flurry of interviews and things that he did. During it, he was recounting them, and he rattled off a string of like 8 different Canadian TV stations that had reached out to him.
Here's the big question. Are you a bowler, David?
I'm not like a competitive bowler, but I still like it. And I'm a terrible bowler still, but I have a good time.
And he just paused and was like, Canadians really love bowling balls, I guess. And we both kind of nodded our head. And I didn't know that. Okay, that's another thing to stash away.
How did he handle his newfound celebrity?
Well, he's a quiet guy. He's a reserved guy. And this story makes you feel like that it flies in the face of that. But he just didn't expect any of this would happen. So he would get very nervous, very nervous.
How did it feel to be like the flavor of the day or whatever for the internet?
It was kind of scary but cool at the same time. Like before all this, I'm not a hermit, but I used to socialize all the time. But after having kids, I'm kind of stay home and don't socialize as much. But it was just like kind of crazy, just the going from 0 to 60 in a second or whatever.
One thing he did say to me is that as someone who had never done interviews before, you know, the first one was hard. The second one was a little not quite as hard. And by the 5th, the 10th, the 20th, he just was kind of relaxed with it.
But we still have not gotten yet to the question we all really need the answer to, Ryan, which is where the 162 bowling balls actually came from. And the answer, from what I understand here, it actually requires a journey into the history of bowling itself.
This took me down a bowling alley that I never expected to go down. Where did these bowling balls come from? Where did bowling balls come from? It's had a wild existence on this planet, and it goes back centuries. If you consider bowling to be a ball used to knock down objects of some kind, it dates back well past 5000 BC. Miniature pins and balls were discovered in an Egyptian child's grave centuries ago. And ever since then, Romans played it, Germans played it. It was very big in Europe up through the mid-1500s. And then when Europeans began migrating to the United States, that's when it came to the United States also. Around 1850, a man named John Moses Brunswick, you may recognize that name, Brunswick, he immigrated from Switzerland and landed in the United States, and he spent some time in Philadelphia. So he was an apprentice in Philadelphia where he helped make wooden carriages. And he eventually got it in his head, I want to do this myself. I want to start my own business. And so he moved out to the Midwest. He figured that was closer to most of the hubs where lumber was sold. And he started Brunswick Manufacturing.
It all got started back in 1845 when John M. Brunswick decided that American recreation could not only be a sound investment, but also a career in which a man could take real pride.
And it started out as making wooden carriages, but John Moses Brunswick also loved bowling and billiards. And so he added those products.
Today, Brunswick's products are known as the best there is in bowling, and rightfully so, for nothing but the highest quality materials go into their making.
And he set up headquarters in Muskegon, Michigan, and it remains that to this day.
So Brunswick is headquartered in Muskegon, Michigan, and I'm looking at the map here, Ryan, on my computer. It's just a few miles north of Norton Shores, which is, of course, where David Olson lives. So just connecting dots here, that feels significant.
Yeah, the first leg of this mystery was solved pretty quickly. I mean, the balls said Brunswick on them. Everybody in this area knows Brunswick. It's one of those core businesses in a community. Half the community worked there. So pretty quickly, David realized, like, oh, these are Brunswick balls. They must have come from the factory that's a couple of miles away from my house. But the second part of this mystery was so much more interesting and perplexing. And that part was, how did 162 bowling balls travel from the plant in Muskegon to David Olson's steps in Norton Shores?
We'll be right back.
Passion, drive, and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home some huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
Nothing brings people together or makes friends so fast as bowling. So call a friend. Bowl Brunswick tomorrow.
So Brunswick has been this institution in Michigan, in this community for generations, Ryan. What connection, if any, did David Olson himself have with Brunswick?
Everybody in the area has a great reverence for Brunswick because a lot of people's family heritage is all rest on the bowling balls and pool cues and everything else that Brunswick made. But David especially listened to stories from his grandfather for most of his life. His grandfather, Mike, he died in 2009, but he worked at Brunswick for over 50 years. He's one of their longest employees. One thing David wrestled with was his whole life was, what do I want to be when I grow up? And he got the answer from his grandfather. His grandfather was so handy. His grandfather could do anything. He could build anything. And he would show David how to build all sorts of things, how to mow the grass, how to fix the lawnmower, all of that stuff. And so his grandfather set him up for his life of being an incredibly handy person. And that's the path he ended up following professionally.
So what did David's grandfather actually do at Brunswick?
His grandfather really worked his way up at the Brunswick factory. He got a job there, I believe it was in the late 40s, early 50s, and he was on the maintenance crew, and he worked his way up. David's grandfather eventually got a job in the lab, and his job, this is the part of the story that really like made my head explode a little bit, but David's grandfather, his job in the early 50s was testing bowling balls to make sure that they were the proper density.
How does one test a bowling ball for its density?
Well, so advances have been made since then, but at the time, David's grandfather described it as it sounded like a trampoline, a little trampoline that you bounced the balls on, and they had to bounce to a certain height or else something was off.
Brunswick's super accurate, precision balanced mineralite ball is ground to split thousandths roundness for true travel from fingertips to standing pins.
And what happened to the balls that did not meet those required super precise standards?
Well, if it did not pass all the testing that they did, they had a policy where there was a dumpster out back where they would throw defective stuff, including bowling balls. And not only could you take that stuff if you were an employee, they opened it up to the public. And so people decades and decades ago, before there was code enforcers in every community, you could pull up in a truck and conceivably grab 162 bowling balls and take them to your house. I talked to David's grandmother, Judy, and David's grandfather, he really disliked it because he would see the public, the people pull up out front and pick up all these bowling balls, and he knew what they were doing with them, which was using them to fill in where they yanked a tree out or apparently where you were going to put in some steps. He used to say to Judy, his wife, all the time, David's grandmother, he would always say to him, someday somebody's going to go out back and they're going to start to dig up and try to put in a pool and they're going to find 1,000 bowling balls and it's going to be our fault. He worried that the towns around it were going to end up being built on bowling balls.
So Ryan, I mean, basically what you're saying is that David's grandfather foretold this exact scenario that one day, some poor homeowner was going to stumble upon a giant cache of bowling balls on their property, and I presume that he never imagined that that poor homeowner would also wind up being his own grandson. But what I don't get is still why anyone would utilize bowling balls as the foundation for their backdoor stairs.
So I called a bunch of excavation and construction people to ask them about this. And all of them cut me off halfway through talking. And they were like, first of all, construction guys, great to interview because they are no BS. They tell you to shut up, stop talking. I got to tell you something. And so I had a couple people say to me, dude, you're thinking about this through a 2021 lens where there's an EPA and there are permits and there are Home Depots and Lowe's within 5 miles of people's houses. That isn't what the world looked like in 1950. It was free, first of all. You know, these were not wealthy times. It actually cost, if you wanted to pave your driveway or something, that was something for the 1%ers of the 1950s. So this was a free solution. And if you're handy, like this person must have been, the way that it worked is he used cement blocks on the outskirts of these steps. So he used them. It's sort of like if it was a human body, the skin of these steps was cement blocks, but the entire core of it was sand and bowling balls. And he got the bowling balls for free, dropped them in there, filled the sand in. The best example that one of the guys told me was, he was like, hey, think about this as a jar with marbles in it, right? It's pretty sturdy. The jar is the outside of the steps, basically. And then the marbles are the bowling balls.
Mm.
The key to all of it, though, is the sand. What happens if that jar of marbles is pretty sturdy, but when you pour in sand, it settles in all around the marbles or the bowling balls, and it forms this almost 100% density. And it actually is very, very sturdy. And so, like, by the end of it, talking to these excavation guys, I was like, okay, this is the most brilliant thing ever invented. Sand and bowling balls. Like, everything should be built on sand and bowling balls.
So what does David Olson know about the people who built his house?
Well, so he bought the house in 2018, did not know the people he bought it from. And so the theory is that a pretty handy person must have lived there and put these bowling balls, grabbed them in the back of a truck, which, by the way, I got to tell you, any vehicle that was moving around with 162 bowling balls did not want to be behind that guy. But that is the theory, is that somebody who's pretty handy got some cement blocks and put them on top of sand and the bowling balls, and it worked for 70 years.
Ryan, so there is all this sand, there are all these bowling balls, 162 of them, like a ton literally of bowling balls. What does David do next with the results of his archaeological dig still just sitting in his yard?
The next move he made was he contacted Brunswick. He wanted to talk to them about this. And so he talked to them. He asked for some of the paperwork around, like, what are the balls made of? And is it safe to have them, found them in the ground? But he also, he just took them in. They were very interested to see the balls. And when he brought in a couple of them, they treated them like historical artifacts and asked if they could have them. And in exchange, they gave him two brand new bowling balls, state of the art, one for him, one for his wife. His ball says the Igniter and hers says Crown Jewel.
So if Brunswick took some of his bowling balls, because he has his collection, right? He has plenty of bowling balls to go around. What does David do with the rest of the bowling balls?
Well, they're mostly just piled up in the back, but he did get a lot of interest from people, including a local restaurant this summer that said, hey, we saw your story and we want to have a Flintstones bowling tournament where we're going to set up pins on the street, no gutters or anything like that. There was someone that stood behind the pins. And you take these bowling balls. Again, David's balls do not have holes in them. They're just like this old school, just it's a big rock, basically.
Right.
You got two rolls, 10 pins. The pins are not set up evenly. There's no oil patterns on the lanes. And you just chuck bowling balls with a drink in your hand. That's kind of what the tournament was. And David was like, oh, cool. Okay, that's great. But he didn't go to enter the tournament. Him and his wife thought, well, let's get a babysitter. And let's go have a night out. They're giving us free dinner. It's a nice restaurant. So we'll donate our bowling balls and we'll go have dinner. And that'll be the extent of it. Except it wasn't.
What happened?
So he goes and they have dinner. And the tournament organizer says, hey, do you want to play in the bowling tournament? And Megan was like, sure, let's do it. They entered the tournament and there were a bunch of people there who were like trying to win the tournament. They specifically pointed at these two guys in Brunswick bowling shirts, like almost like a uniform. They showed up at this Flintstone bowling tournament in like uni, ready to rip. And they just thought, well, we'll play. We don't even bowl, so we're not going to play well, but it'll be fun. And they start playing and they destroy people. I can almost see the movie montage. They're showing them like with looks on their faces like, wait, we're doing well.
All right, now go. Damn!
They beat them. They got a trophy and a $50 gift card. But more than that, they walked out of there. You know, they had just rolled these bizarro discovery bowling balls from their backyard. They walked out of there and they were just like, looking at each other like, what has happened to us in the last month? Like, we are different people, and this is actually a life-altering experience.
So, Ryan, I mean, this is truly a question that I never thought I would ask on this podcast, or anywhere, honestly. But how did finding 162 bowling balls buried underneath his house change the life of David Olson?
he knew it was going to change his life a little bit. He knew it was going to make him pretty popular that day and even in the days afterwards. But like what he didn't expect was that it wouldn't just change his life. It would change him. And it has changed him. He described to me his past two jobs that he went and interviewed for. One was a few years ago before the bowling balls. And he went, he was a nervous wreck, sweating so bad that he was worried they'd be like, well, we can't have Captain Sweats as an employee here. He thought maybe it would like exclude him from getting hired. That's how nervous he was. And so fast forward a few years and he finds the bowling balls. He gets comfortable with himself being on camera and just being him. He decided that, you know, I'm looking for a job change right now. And so in August, he went and he interviewed for another job. On the way there, he had some concerns like, well, the last time, hope I don't get really nervous. And he went in and he nailed it. He was a different guy. You know, it was David Olson, but it was the bowling ball guy. The bowling ball guy interviewed for that job as a machinist. He's like, bowling was like sort of a part of my life. And then I find these bowling balls and it just becomes a part of me. I am the bowling ball guy. And it has helped him break through to be a different kind of David Olson as a 33-year-old. It's the last gift he ever thought he would want or get. And here it is. He is a different man.
Ryan Hockensmith, our local news correspondent, thank you for telling us a story that was a lot more.
Thanks, Pablo. This is a blast.
I'm Pablo Torre, and this has been ESPN Daily. I'll talk to you tomorrow.